Drive Time on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When it comes to pensions, performance counts. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Now, the Israeli army has urged residents of 23 villages in southern Lebanon to evacuate as attacks intensify in the region. Just before coming on air, I spoke with Med Global volunteer, an emergency medicine physician and US Army veteran, Dr. Bing Lee, who's currently in Lebanon supporting local hospitals in the Bekaa Valley region. I asked her first about the impact of the bombing on health services in Lebanon.
There's definitely been a lot of stress, a lot of sadness. Just yesterday, I was having dinner with some of the staff of the hospital and some of the administration, and they told me that just 2 days before we arrived, there was a bombing nearby, and this was one of the bombings. So there's some bombings that occur with warning, rarely, mostly in the South Beirut suburbs, because it's a densely populated area, and or perhaps because they know that the international community is watching the Beirut area more keenly. These are all speculations from the people that I've talked to, but in many areas you don't receive any warning before there's a bombing. So it could be, so from their perspective, they don't know who's going to be hit, when or where. And so there were casualties that were arriving to the hospital, and this was 2 days before we arrived here to the hospital in Bekaa. And one of the first patients that came in was actually the son of the head nurse that was working at the time in the emergency department, and he was dead on arrival. So she was devastated, and they told me everybody was crying, everybody's devastated, but they had to keep on working because patients kept on arriving and kept on arriving. So that's very devastating for the community.
That's incomprehensible for an awful lot of our listeners, I would imagine, that the son of the head nurse would arrive in, you say, dead on arrival. I mean, the impact of that alone, that one incident must be devastating.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And on top of that, many of the staff here have lost parts of their homes, or parts of the homes have been damaged, or they know somebody who has lost their home. For example, just earlier today, the TV was on with the news playing while we were eating lunch in the staff room. And I asked them, because it was in Arabic and I couldn't read it, I asked what was on the news. And they said, oh, that's actually one of the doctor's brother's houses. That's actually his house that they're showing that's in ruins, and was one of the houses that was hit yesterday. Luckily, everybody was fine. They weren't there at the time. But it's everyone's got this fear of like losing these things that you've worked your whole life for, that your family has saved up for. You invest so much into these homes. They're built to last. They're made with very strong materials. So I think there's that anxiety, especially having already gone through an economic crisis, that many people are feeling a lot of anxiety, both for their health and for everybody's safety, but also in terms of their homes and their livelihoods.
And it's also surreal to be in your workplace watching television, realizing you don't have a home to go to, or your neighbor might not have a home to go to. The bombing is intense, isn't it? And the evacuation orders add to the chaos. And that's even happening today, as you say.
Correct. So as for the bombings, a lot of the staff are actually living in the hospital because they don't feel that it's safe to go to their home.
What are the extent of the injuries you've seen there so far?
I only arrived at this hospital about a day or last night, actually. So in terms of the injuries, I definitely haven't seen firsthand the same extent that the staff has been describing to me. These multiple people arriving at the same time with acute injuries. However, just last night we did hear, from my perspective, it sounded like many bombs in the distance for quite a while. And I asked one of the nurses, oh, is this normal? And he said, oh, this is actually lighter than it has been the past few days. It seems like they're calming down. So I found that surprising. And we'd received a patient who had been hit in the head by a falling piece of concrete. Luckily, they were doing fine. Most of the injuries that the staff have described, one of the issues is that they're all very well trained, but sometimes the number that arrive can be overwhelming.
But I know you've also offered medical training in a number of hospitals around the Beirut area, so you've seen horrific injuries, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So there's patients that one of the devastating factors is losing your ability to see, and also the pager incident where people's hands were injured. We've seen patients on follow-up just today, some wound care. For patients that you realize that they've lost most of their fingers and both of their eyes have been basically made non-functional. I talked to the ophthalmologist, who is the eye surgeon, and he said so many patients arrived on the same day when the pager incident happened, that he just felt he's still getting over. He said he's still feeling traumatized, still trying to get over, because he never imagined that he'd have to deal with so many of these injuries, of the same injury at the same time. And these are very young people for the most part. So it's very devastating, the amount of disability and the number of people that you see walking around with these bandages on, with basically missing a hand or missing their eyesight.
I know you previously spent time in northern Gaza as a volunteer in the Indonesian hospital. You might recount to me what that was like for you as an emergency medicine specialist.
So working in the north of Gaza, it's really like nothing that I ever expected while working in medicine. We all know that there's a reduced amount of aid and supplies and medical support that's being offered to be getting allowed into Gaza in the first place. But in the north, it's even more challenging. We know that there's maybe about 1/5 or 1/6 of the amount of aid that gets into South Gaza that will make it to North Gaza. The lack of resources, both in terms of trained personnel, because so many personnel either cannot work anymore or have been injured or had to migrate southward, and a lack of supplies, a lack of imaging, using, for example, the same gauze multiple times, although it gets soaked because there's no other choice. And the types of injuries, because of the nature of these types of the explosions and the airstrikes, you see many patients that one person alone requires both neurosurgery because there's a intracranial brain injury, and they also require orthopedic surgery and have amputations, and they also require surgery for just one patient requires so many specialists, and then you have multiple of these patients, and it can be very overwhelming very quickly, especially in a system where at Indonesian hospital we didn't have proper CT scanning, proper imaging to really find out what is going on.
Even if I may intervene, even a specialist like you, with your vast experience, must feel in a situation like that helpless at times, do you?
Absolutely. I remember receiving a patient that was a 2-year-old girl who they pulled out of the rubble and wasn't breathing, and despite our resuscitative efforts, having to declare that she was basically not going to survive these injuries and the devastation and it was actually her older brother who was there with her, but he was also very young, I think about 10 years old, and he was crying, and it was just very devastating, these things that are happening to children especially. Yeah. And
how does a child get over that? I mean, can I ask, do you know where his parents were?
There was a relative that arrived eventually, I believe like an uncle or maybe another older brother. A lot of these families are already so shattered, for many reasons, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Many children appear unaccompanied at times. So the answer is that I don't really know how one recovers from these months and months of the injury. And you know, another reason why, in terms of providing support, there's both the support in terms of like providing trauma care, emergency physicians, but organizations such as Med Global, for example, are also trying to see how in the longer term we can provide psychological support and longer term primary care support.
It just seems extremely difficult. I mean, I know you said in a previous interview that in Gaza, it feels like death is everywhere.
It feels like people's, even if they have wounds that occurred months ago, that they don't heal. You don't know what the long-term prognosis is going to be for many patients, even patients that typically would do well, such as children that typically recover well from traumatic injuries as long as they're stabilized. The first day or two in the U.S., they will find out later that they didn't make it because of it's all speculation because you don't know exactly what happened, but you know that they're malnourished and you know that there just isn't enough equipment and supplies and personnel to go around.
Can I ask you finally, Dr. Bing Lee, about the killing of Yahya Sinwar, the leader of Hamas, and the clamour from various quarters and leaders saying, look, this might be a time to bring an end to the conflict. But the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, saying the war is not over yet. What are the prospects at this juncture, in your opinion, for some sort of a ceasefire or peace?
So I hope that this is used as a juncture to help produce a ceasefire and to the powers that be to start being serious about a ceasefire. It feels that from my perspective, no matter how much speculation or hope I put into the news in terms of seeing every time I've seen that ceasefire talks are progressing. It feels that in the end, nothing really changes. I remember being in Gaza, and when you're told there's going to be a pause in a certain area, that you really don't trust it, because you still hear bombs, you still see people injured. Oftentimes, when you're told that, one of my friends who worked at Nasser Hospital the month after I left, she said that during the pauses for the polio vaccines, she was still experiencing influxes of patients just during the time that children are supposed to be receiving their vaccines in those same neighborhoods and in those same areas. So from the perspective of humanitarian and in terms of working, I feel that we have to focus on trying to gather resources and trying to plan for the possible worst case scenario while we hope that it does not worsen.
Dr. Bing Lee in Lebanon, thank you very much indeed for joining us in the program.
Thank you. Appreciate it.